once again, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. I'm Joey Gaynor. Welcome to Wrestling with the Pop Culturians. And, of course, the lovely and talented
Dan Madigan. Our third wheel is not here today. He's pulled away. The illustrious and handsome Mr. Paul McGee.
Don't know where he is. He could be on his own assignment. We don't know.
He could be here. He could be there. But we have.
We do have.
A special guest. We're very happy. Our special guest today. Mr. David Marquez.
Hello.
That's right, of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood.
Hello, thanks for having me.
For many things.
And let's
recap before we do. Last week we talked about La Boya.
That was great.
And a friend of ours is involved
as well.
And La Boya was a show. It was an event Saturday night, April 11th, in Plaza de la Raza. It was a Lucha Libre show. It was a concert. It was an art show. And we hoped for the best. And the overwhelming responses blew us away. We had over 4,000 people show up. We had some amazing artists from around the country donated work. We had amazing bands play, DJs. You were there, Joey. It was an amazing time. And we want to thank everyone for being involved, that brought together.
I got to tell you, man, everybody there had an amazing good time. I didn't see one frown. I saw everybody smiling. The only sad thing that would bring you into a little bit of tear to your eye was the altar for Perro Aguayo Jr.
Yeah, that was as Joey's mentioned. As you walk into the art gallery, it's a big gallery down the plaza. You've been there, David. Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours, a friend of La Boya, Eric Guzman, and one day he made this amazing altar for Perro Aguayo Jr. And it's just it's just done with affection because there's mostly photographs of him with his dad as a young kid, and it's kind of sobering when you walk in, you first see it. And you look at each photograph, but then you step back, you look at the whole tonality of what's going on. It's an amazing, Eric did an amazing job.
I saw when I was looking at all the photographs, and I saw the picture of Perro Sr. with his son when he maybe was 10. And I worked with him in Muscle Rock. I worked with Perro Sr.
The dad, yeah.
And when I saw the picture, I said, boy, I'm not sure, but it looked like he brought him to one of the shows because the face was so familiar.
Yeah.
And that was, I had to stop. I literally had
a lot of the guys from Lucha Underground came and they saw it.
Conan was there.
It was the first thing you see when you walked in the exhibit, and it really sort of like, but it set a tone, an emotional tone as you walked through the show. But the show was a major success. We're doing another one. We've had many sponsors now jumping out, coming on board and stuff. But this show could not have been the success La Boya was without my partner, Antonio Pelayo, who's an amazing artist. You've seen his work. Steve Guerrero, our partner. But other people came up on board and just brought it over. Eric Guzman, who did a lot of the videos for us, he did all this stuff, shot this stuff. He made the altar. And a special thanks, Nadia Gonzalez, who was there all the way for us, Brenda, PR person. But a special thanks goes to Kevin Kleinrock and the guys at Mass Republic and his pal Ruben Zamora. These guys went above and beyond. Above and beyond, not just saving us money by getting us things, but really throwing us a lifeline and helping us along the way. And Kevin, who has a passion for wrestling, which I know I don't have to tell David.
Right. No.
I've never met anyone with the passion, and I've been in the business a long time. You've been in the business 30 years practically.
Yeah.
And a guy like Kevin Kleinrock, it's a breath of fresh air to know someone in this business, not just wrestling, entertainment, show business, who's trustworthy, who loves what he's doing. A guy, when he gives you his word, you don't worry at night going, is that going to happen? It's going to happen.
That's right.
And he's Mass Republic, the guys he brought, the artist Pale Horse, and the guys Robert Rodriguez, the other artists he has from Mass Republic, Scrap Dressing, these guys were amazing. And I can't thank Kevin, I can't thank Ruben, I can't thank Manny Peoples. I can't think. You know,
Manny was there. Huh?
Joey Chaos from the Santino brothers.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Everyone, Joey Chaos is fantastic.
Yep.
He couldn't do enough for us. The Santino brothers organization, us at La Boya, give you guys a major thanks. And the show is up. If you're in Los Angeles, the art show is up till May 15th. And there's 130 of the best artists that I've worked with. Famous artists. Shepard Fairey donated 3 pieces. The illustrator, Caleb Brown, the illustrator. Ed McGinty, who's an actor, who's a photographer, who's been on, you know, Boardwalk Empire as a writer and stuff. He has a photograph in the show. So Keith Rainville, who you know, Keith, who was in Parts Unknown, he's got stuff in the show. Antonio, my partner. So right across the board, I mean, everyone's involved, Pale Horse themselves. So if you're in Los Angeles area, go to the Plaza de la Raza, and it's from 5 to 9 at night, from Tuesdays to Fridays, and it's open at noon on Sundays and Saturdays. So come on down, check out the artwork. It's free. It's amazing. And we're going to do another one next year. So everyone, thank you from La Boya. You made it a smashing success.
It was awesome, right by the water there. That they had the lake and everything, and the I must say that the margaritas were exceptional.
Yes, well, thank you, Tito's Vodka.
Yeah.
Thank you, El Jimador Tequila. These guys, Tito's Vodka, sponsoring us with vodka, Jimador with the tequila, and a lot of the displays and stuff. Stella Rosa wine, Yuritos. I mean, the sponsors are in the American Diabetes Association. Which I think negates everything else.
Diabetics can drink vodka because it's from potatoes.
Exactly. That's what we're doing. Joey Gaynor, medical advice from Joey Gaynor.
Yeah, my doctor's going to love that one. Yeah.
But it was just the sponsors, the vendors, even I like to thank security because they never get the thanks sometimes because even though it was a very cool crowd to work with. You know, just work in the VIP room for this is a lot of aggravation sometimes. And thank you, security. Thank you for everyone that never gets a thank you. Thank you. And a special thanks to Councilman Gilbert Sedeo. Gilbert Sedeo came on stage. He gave us an award, and my name was spelled right, and I was impressed. But, you know, he really loved it. So we want to thank him and everyone for being part of it. So we'll see you next. Definitely, La Boya is now going to be an annual event. You'll be there next year.
Well, thank you.
And we'll have a great time. And we'll have a great time now because I've known of you for a while. People we know in common, but we were talking earlier outside, and it's just like the three of us have so much in common, and not just in the wrestling circles.
No.
You know, so everything. So it's just, I want to give you now a little, we'll give your background because you've been in the wrestling business 27
years.
That's
right, 27 years.
27 years. So can you just, I mean, and now you're promoting a great venue down, a local venue, but you shoot down.
In Oxnard area.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Port Hueneme at the Ocean View Pavilion. It's a theater right on the beach. Mm. So it's fantastic.
About championship wrestling from Hollywood.
That's right, championship wrestling from Hollywood.
If you don't know anything about it, you're not a wrestling fan.
But you were in Glendale first, right?
We started actually in Santa Ana.
Santa Ana, okay.
That's where we started taping.
Down at the Galaxy Theater.
Yeah.
Yes, I went to a couple of shows there.
Yeah, and, I mean, we started there 6 years ago.
Yep.
We've been on the air almost 5.5 now.
That's a long
on
stretch.
On KDOC.
That's a long for independent. For,
yeah.
That's a
so 52 weeks, no
that's
breaks.
When wow. Famous B weighed about 60 pounds less.
For sure.
Yeah.
We started down there and then people were telling us that if we're championship wrestling from Hollywood, why don't you originate from Hollywood? And I would say, well, when CSI Miami isn't in Toronto, because to me it's a television show.
Exactly. Suspension of disbelief.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The sign says Hollywood, so go with it.
Yeah. I mean, you got Joey Ryan. How much more Hollywood are you going to get?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not. You can't get any more than Joey.
Yeah. So we moved to the Regent Showcase Theater on La Brea and Melrose, right across the street from Pink's Hot Dogs, movie theater.
Yeah, I remember
which
that.
I pass that theater all the time now. I go to New Beverly all the time.
So we rented the place, so we put the banners out front and everything, and to me it was a billboard. We had three sides. We could do whatever we want with, so we just put vinyl up there, and so people learned about it that way, and we were there for about a year. Then we went to Glendale, the Glendale Studios.
Yeah, I remember that.
We shot there for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then these great folks in Oxnard got a hold of me because of wrestling, I got hired by KDOC to be their director of production.
Fantastic.
I was delivering the tape and I was down there and they didn't have anybody. They just dismantled their news and they weren't doing anything. And the general manager decided that they wanted to do production again. And I was going down there and I was the only guy they had immediate access to do broadcasting.
So can you, to the people who aren't savvy enough to the technology, what your capacity, what do you do now? I mean, we know, what do you do behind
on the show?
Which is besides everything.
It is everything. It is everything. The show is, to steal a phrase from Walt, I'm the conductor of the orchestra. And to make a show happen, there's an awful lot of arms and legs and everything else to make it work. So we have writers and producers and craftspeople and techs and I think our little indie show, that's how people like to refer to it, but every taping every 2 weeks down there, our staff, including talent, is pushing about 65, 70 people.
That's a lot.
That is our production.
That's a lot.
Television, and engineering, everything.
Yeah, that's and I think people, when you realize, when you watch wrestling, whether it's Vince's venue or TNA.
Whatever.
Or the small independent. I mean, to get, just to put a ring up.
Yeah.
I mean, we just did a show.
That could be nine guys.
Yeah. I mean, and to maintain the ring, everything around this. So you get the people, the viewer, the fans get to see the final product. They get to watch and click the TV on to see. You have no idea what comes together. Yeah.
We have art. We have an art director.
Yeah.
We have a sound guy. I mean, not just the actual guy who sets up all the audio, but then we have a guy that's recording it. Mm-hmm. And our show, which probably no one realizes, we record 17 tracks of audio.
Really?
Yes. Everything's ISO'd. Everything. Now, you don't necessarily hear everything on the air for copyright reasons but the tracks exist.
Does that mean you can clip Stu Stone at any time?
Well, yes.
He's not your best friend on that show.
He's not. He's become a better friend. Vermin actually is now friendly.
No, Vermin doesn't like
me. Vermin doesn't like me, and I don't care for Yuma and the guys either. Now I've become more of a character on the show, which is strange.
That happens, doesn't it?
It does. It happens. It did. It's taken me, 20 some odd years to actually be on camera as a figurehead. It's kind of weird because everyone will say, well, it's the Vince thing, and now you're the owner and you're on camera. I was just the interviewer only because, going back to the old Vern line, I know I'm available, and it's not weird if I pop on television in an odd location. Yeah, so if we have to shoot an interview or fill time, it's not weird that I pop up. So that's the only reason why I did it. I'm always the older guy in this little circle, so I'm the broadcaster.
You're the Edward R. Murrow of that area.
But you come off as the authority figure.
We've had general managers and matchmakers. Well, I try to use matchmaker on TV. Mm-hmm. So we've had matchmakers, two or three of them, and, over time, they just go away.
Danielle.
Yeah, and so she was gone, and we didn't have anybody else at the time, and the guys were like, well, hell, just you go do it. And it's so difficult because although I don't consider myself a writer on the show, I think I act more as an editor, copy editor. So the guys, the writers and the bookers and whatnot, and we've had great ones over the years, that they put all this together, and then, hours before the show, we'll go and walk through it, and maybe he needs to stand there, and this is the blocking, and this is why you're doing it. And because when you're actually doing it, it's completely different than when you're
envisioning it. I've gone through that.
Whether it's movies or television or whatever. And with us, it's theatric and big.
Yeah, I mean,
and you're right there, and then you have to worry about people. Like, they're always, let's do a ladder match. No, you can't, because the people are right there, and why
do it? We'll throw fire out. Yes.
Yeah, well, we've done fire many times. That we've done.
It's like doing Muscle Rock. We would do the Port Hueneme. We would do the military base.
Yep.
And we got there one time, and they're talking about what match is going to open. And I came in, and I said, I just found out that everybody just got shipped off to the Gulf War.
Yeah.
So there's going to be 18 people in the house. So they open up, somebody's getting juiced, and pardon my, I eliminated kayfabe there, but they had the opening match was
dead. Don't worry
blood.
No.
It was blood everywhere, and one of the captains, whatever, just came over and says, is this every fight? Is this going to be every fight? I said, no, just don't worry about it. But when you put a show, even for 10 people that were there, Muscle Rock had 45 people to put up the ring, the cameras, all that. It is, if you're going to do a show right, involved. You need a lot
of
people.
It really is. It's, and I've said before, I've been on movie sets, I've been on TV sets, in the business enough times, but I had never seen a crew as efficient, as fast, and as technically proficient as Vince's crew.
For sure.
I mean, it's like a traveling rock and roll show.
It is.
It's what Randy Savage called it.
Yeah, that's...
He called it, it's the rock show. It's not wrestling
anymore. It really is. You've got 18-wheelers. It's like a caravan coming in. You've got guys putting a massive stages. Yeah. You get everything around. You get pyro, this and that, tons of cable. I mean, careful where you stand. And me being in creative, I would come as things were set up and stuff. I was following Vince's stuff. I would really admire what these guys would do, because you put up the ring, and as we're leaving, they're breaking it down again. Yeah. They're doing another show the next day, 4 miles away. It's like being in a traveling rock and roll circus.
Crazy part about that is that the public doesn't realize that the staff that they see on television as on camera, they're the ring crew.
That's
And people don't realize that
Tony
stuff.
Tony Schimmel.
Tony and Tony, the Tony, refs and all that stuff.
All those guys. I mean, Charlie Robinson, all those cats are friends of mine. And Jimmy Quaderis, all those great guys. And, you know, those guys, the ones putting the ring up, breaking it down. And you don't realize they're the road warriors.
Absolutely. I mean,
and that term being them being the guys lugging it out. It's like when Jackson Brown sang that song, you know.
The loadout.
The loadout. It really is. Or even Motorhead, you know, we are the road crew.
That's right. I
mean, it's just you don't realize that these guys literally are the backbone of getting things done and stuff, you know.
And so, Carlos Mata, Raul's brother, we would do shows and we would get his ring. And Carlos would show up. And he'd be in work clothes and gloves on, and he's putting the ring together with the guys. Then he would come out and wrestle on the show, and he'd have a belt, you know.
That's amazing.
And it was great. I mean, anyway, great. These guys, again, the guys who do this work so hard, even on these small shows, and people just don't realize it. That you know, you can sit there and say, "Oh, those guys are not big time." It doesn't matter. It's just as much work.
Just renting a hall.
Yeah.
Oh.
Renting a hall, the aggravation of insurance and this. I mean, I'm not going to.
Even now more than ever. I mean, the 90s were hell with ECW, but the logistics of putting on a pro wrestling show. That's why I've decided to not do house shows. I've decided to be a television show, be a broadcast, depend on advertising. Our tickets are free. We don't sell tickets. No, it's like going to the Price is Right. It's exactly how it is.
You can control it.
Oh, we control the whole thing.
Yeah, control. Whereas when you do house shows, sometimes you just, I mean, I've done house shows where you're at the mercy of fate sometimes.
Yes.
You know, and you can have that.
And so, I mean, our annual budget is I hate releasing numbers, our annual budget is very high for what probably people will think because we are six cameras, all high def. 16 mics are everywhere from lavaliers to shotguns to everything all over the place.
Yeah.
And the lighting and it's wiggly lights and it's the whole bit. We try our best with what we have.
And you're on KDOC, which is channel 56.
56 in town. You have to check your cable systems because there's different channels.
TV, it's on like at 2 in the morning.
Well, we're on at 3 a.m.
3 a.m.
By choice. I picked that time.
Tell us what we are.
I'd like to know.
Well, for advertising. There's no competition. We get a 7 share.
Oh, that's brilliant.
A 7 share of Los Angeles at 3 in the morning.
That's brilliant.
And in the 18 to 34.
And TV was made for one thing, for advertising.
That's all it is.
Everything else is the shows, the rest is all filler.
And if you count the DVR... How many people DVR?
Well, that's bad though for advertising.
Don't DVR.
Please DVR it.
Watch the commercials.
But on my end, it's bad because if you go to an advertiser, they know people are going to zoom past it.
Yeah.
So I never do. It's called a plus 7. I never ever bring that up.
Yeah.
So we sell the show at a 3.
We'll edit that now. That's an amazing.
You know, so basically, of 5.3 million Los Angeles households, we are getting 7% of that share for 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's amazing.
And at times we're number 2 in the market, behind the networks.
Wow! Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you.
And so the shows, is it Sunday or Saturdays?
Well, I think they advertise it as Saturday night because that's what the Nielsen's pick it up as still Saturdays. But it's physically Sunday morning.
It's Sunday morning. Sunday morning.
Is great for us because if you're a night owl and we do our shows on Sundays, we will say later on today.
Yeah.
Come on down. You'll see the show.
I have literally been following the show since...
Yeah, he's a big fan,
2009?
Thank you.
Yeah.
And because I met Famous B. And we talked. And he said, I'm on this show, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's on Saturday night. And I started watching it. And I was watching the talent that has come through there. And what's his name? Cole Cabana?
Sure.
Some big names.
One of my favorites, Scrap Iron Pierce.
Yeah. Adam Pierce.
And he actually retired.
Yeah, he's done now.
And he took his boots off.
He did.
What he did on your show, to me, was more dramatic and more symbolic than what I've seen on WWE, WCW. When he finished the match, he lost the match, took his boots off and left them in the ring, left barefooted.
Now, the backstory to all that is that's a 5-year program on our show.
Yeah.
Really. You know, between Pierce and Cabana switched the world title five times.
Yeah, that was
on our
great
show.
Matches.
And in a 5-year, all over the world.
See, that's something, as a program like that is unheard of. I mean, it really is. I mean, I was impressed when Sabu and Taz had an 18-month. I mean, they rubbed up against each other. But, you know, and Paul explained to me how by the time they had their match, the crowd was white hot.
Yeah.
White hot. And today, with things being like this, like this, like this, you never see appropriate to take that and to think something like that through. That just enriches the whole experience.
Absolutely.
And just when you sit back and reflect now, you reflect back on, wow, that was an amazing thing. That was an amazing angle that they kept going. You kept it alive.
And the luck that we had with that, though, more than anything, is that their friendship and relationship goes back to when they were 16 in Chicago. So they played high school football together, and we had photos.
Oh, that's great stuff.
You know, against each other, rival schools.
Wow.
That's
great stuff. They came up with Punk and Dave Prazak and Ace Steele and Danny Dominion and all those guys in the Midwest. And then, you know, we have that story to tell. The Gold Bond Mafia is what they called them back then, as they came up together.
Gold Bond Mafia.
And so when I was a figurehead, more than a figurehead, in the NWA, and when I had the opportunity when we got the world championships back from TNA, the first thing I did was, thanks to Ed Schumann out of Chicago, he's passed since, but he was a big supporter of mine and whatever I wanted to do, which was good because he rallied a lot of votes. The NWA back then was all about votes. And
yeah, it was a very political. I don't think people realize wrestling is very political, especially back then when the NWA was an amalgamation of territories, wasn't it?
It's a sanctioning body, basically, and you had a territory. You're not supposed to cross boundary lines like gangsters. It's the same setup.
Like gangsters.
Sam Mushnick in St. Louis said.
Yeah. Well, Sam Mushnick is amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we were still working under that principle. I was, too, up until about 2.5 years ago. But once I got control of the creative of the world championships, we started doing things the right way. And Daniel Bryan,
Tomato's mouth,
originally scheduled to be the world champion when we had this huge tournament all over the world and countries. I mean, I coordinated all these people together, which is rare. You can't get, Vince always says it, and I agree. Normally, wrestling promoters can't order a cup of coffee together.
No, they can't.
It's true.
It's like Japanese fighting fish. They can't be in the same tank.
It's absolutely true. Right. Absolutely true. So to do that was a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Being in a lawsuit and a settlement with TNA as we're getting the championships back, 3D doesn't want to give us the physical belts back. We have the cops, the Orlando police there to pull the damn belts back and... Anyways, it just went on and on and on and on.
More drama.
But yes, but we got the belts back, and then Brian's eye broke. Something, his eye broke. I forgot what it was. It's not an orbital. It was something else. But so he couldn't wrestle legitimately.
Yeah.
And originally it was Brian and Brent Albright.
Yes, yeah.
They were in the finals in San Juan, Bayamon, Puerto Rico, and Savio Vega was hosting the show.
Yeah.
So out of the blue, we were like, well, whatever. I called Terry Taylor, and I put over the finish that I want to do and bring Brian in as the referee with a patch on. And we did a double pin, both shoulders, roll him over, Adam wins. So then we can continue this story later.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And then we did the first title switch in New York City at the Hammerstein with ROH. Mm-hmm. First time the NWA title ever switched. And that's when Albright got the belt back from Adam. That's what opened the door for Adam to allow him to become the booker at ROH. He was already there as a talent.
Yeah.
But more and more. But anyhow, I might be getting far ahead of the story.
It's a great story.
Fascinating. Are you kidding?
But from an NWA standpoint, these guys in the world championship and being able to say the lineage, goes back to 1901.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Farmer Burns and whomever else.
Yeah.
And Ric Flair and Sting and Harley Race and Jack Briscoe and,
Absolutely. That's a coveted title.
Yeah, Pat O'Connor, all that stuff.
Yeah. Buddy Rogers.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people, there's two stories there with Buddy Rogers, of course. The WWF would not have existed if the whole NWA Buddy Rogers thing didn't go down.
Exactly.
But I don't know how many people know this. If you know the Los Angeles area, the Grove up on La Brea, that was the site of Gilmore Field, and it was the site of the first $100,000 gate.
I didn't know that.
Barry Leone and Lou Thesz for the NWA World title.
Wow. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I didn't know. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's the Grove now.
The mall.
Yeah. Barry Leone had a pizzeria for a long time.
His belt was on display in the Santa Monica History Museum for the longest time. There's a section back there because he lived in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
But at any rate, being able to control those championships, I knew that we can get a rub off of them. And when we, much like everybody else in wrestling, no one thought TNA and the Jarretts were going to do anything, especially with the pay-per-views in the beginning.
Yeah.
They were out of Huntsville, I believe. And so to us, they came to us and they licensed the trademarks and the championships for nothing. It was a bad deal. I wasn't a part of the negotiation, but it was a really bad deal. But I, what I saw with it was an opera, because at the time I was the vice president of New Japan Pro Wrestling working for Tanu Inoki.
Oh, we have friends in common over there.
Well, I'm sure we do.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, yeah. Enemies in common too, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I worked out of the Santa Monica Dojo with Simon.
Inoki. I know Simon very well, yeah.
So I became the vice president originally of business development there. And then they gave me the whole operation. And then that's where we created Carl Anderson. That's where we created Fergal Devitt. That's where we created all those guys. Came out of just a little warehouse. In Santa Monica, on Olympic and Sawtelle.
Yeah, that's gone now.
That's I know.
That was my gym for 5 years. Samoa Joe was out of there. Brian was out of there. Yeah. Rocky Romero was out of there.
I know Rocky. TJ Perkins had trained there.
TJ was there. We had a lot of guy by the name of Bobby Quantz that everyone's forgotten about, but Bobby was beautiful. He went on to be a Navy SEAL. But, you know, I was working for them, and they had the... This is how this whole thing started.
No, I'm fascinated, yeah.
Inoki had the NWA territory in Japan.
Yes.
And they were working... 01 would borrowed it. Okay. So they had it for a long, long time. And then they told me I had to start running shows, the office out of Tokyo. And I was like, okay. And so every Friday we ran a show for no one was there. But there were amazing matches that nobody saw.
Yeah, this was in the gym, right?
Yeah, it would be like Carl Anderson versus Fergal Devitt.
Yeah.
You know, or Mikey Nichols against, he's an Australian who's in Noah now. With Shane Haste, or Mikey Nichols versus Rocky Romero. Like these great matches that no one has ever seen.
Yeah.
I have all the tapes, but no one's ever seen them.
Well, we'll come over here and watch them.
So I started doing that, and it wasn't getting any traction, and they were really like pushing this New Japan USA thing. Yeah. I was like, no one's going to give a damn about this. No one cares, from my experience at WCW especially. It's like, no one's going to care about the Japanese wrestling. So then it hit me. I was like, they sent me to the NWA meeting to be the proxy for Inoki 1 year. And it was in Winnipeg. It was horrible. Yeah. I swear I saw birds like frozen in the sky. Yeah, it was so bad.
And that's in the springtime.
Yeah, pretty much. It was so bad. And so I'm up there and I'm listening to all these people and all these characters. And I'm like, wow, what is going on? And I was in the NWA once before that in the mid-90s in Missouri with Harley Race. But that's another
story.
but some of the same people were still around, especially Bob Trobich, who was the lawyer for Jim Crockett. And he negotiated everything for the sale to Turner and all this stuff. And I had known Bob and Howard Brody and all these guys and Dennis Carluzzo and all these people.
Yeah.
Dennis is gone now.
He's
gone. But all these people and Tony Rumble and all that. So now I'm back in this room with all these guys and I'm listening to what they want to do. And they think they're working Jerry Jarrett, and Jerry Jarrett sitting in the corner. And I'm looking at Jerry and I'm like, something's going to happen. Okay. So the relationship's what it is. We're allowed to use the TNA marks. They're allowed to use the NWA marks, blah, 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 blah. They're going to make the world champions. And to me, I'm like, okay, so this territory thing could actually maybe work.
Yeah.
And I was a vital part of it because I was Japan.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to go to Japan. And so I went to my superiors and said, I want to bring the NWA back to Los Angeles. And we'll run our Sunday shows as NWA Pro Wrestling. And I couldn't at the time because there was a guy up north who had the territory and I had to negotiate with him. And since it was Inoki, the price was so damn high.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, screw it. We won't do that. Luckily, the guy hit his girlfriend with a gun like that. He went to jail. He couldn't go to the meeting and pay his fee. So I did.
I never thought domestic violence would have an upshot. But for that, that's just congrats.
And I got the territory. And me just thinking ahead and seeing how the office worked and how pro wrestling works, I didn't do the paperwork as Antonio Inoki. I did it as David Marquez, and I paid for it. So Inoki didn't have it. I had it in California, but Inoki still had it in Japan.
Oh, that's great. We split.
And then I had the proxy, so I had two votes.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, you need that power in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then I started making allies and all that kind of stuff with Ed Schumann and Bill Behrens and a couple other guys. Dave Republic in Vancouver. So this whole thing starts going, and then I say, well, let's bring the world championships back. And so we did the tournament, then we did the tag team tournament, and that's what kind of got this whole thing going and got attention on me. People have always known about me. But everybody always is like, Dave is just the TV guy. They never really think of me as the wrestling guy, which is, I think, great.
It's the ace in your hole.
Yes.
People tend to second guess, underestimate your ability negotiation or the wrestling.
Absolutely.
Act, yeah.
Which no, absolutely.
Benefit, yeah.
So it's like, as an example, I just came back from Cauliflower Alley this weekend, which is a reunion of wrestling right, yeah. boxers, stuntmen, actors. And while I was there, like there's young guys who work with me now and they just know me as Dave. Yeah. They don't know really much.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't, but they don't. And I give them a.
They don't bother to look.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't know their history.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I give them an envelope at the end of the show, and I give them their finish with our crew, and yeah. they know that I'm the director of the show and all that. So I'm there, and when Jushin Liger with his hood off comes running towards me, Adebazan, you know, and spears me into the wall of the TGI Fridays at the Gold Coast Casino. Yeah. It was like, well, how the hell? Why does he know you? Like, I've known this guy for 15, 20 years, yeah. And it goes on and on and on. And, you know, Harley Race pulling me in and whispering in my ear, you know, now I'm the superstar stud to these guys when normally I'm just that jackass that gives them a check, you know, their money.
it's better they find out this way.
And it's true.
It's better that, yeah.
I've seen so many wide eyes seeing that, and I'm still the unassuming kid.
That's your gimmick.
Yeah.
As we'll say.
Probably.
That's a great gimmick.
It is funny when you when we were doing Muscle Rock or Incredibly yeah. Strange Wrestling when I was working with Johnny Legend,
and Eric Caden,
the
friend
comics, the wrestlers would look at me as this comedian guy, and yeah. what's he doing? And all of a sudden, Johnny and I are making the matches. Yeah. Now they're walking up to me going, what do you have me doing?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know, I haven't thought about it yet.
Yeah, for sure.
And I said, are you serious about this? Because I am.
Yeah.
And so Johnny and I sit down and make the matches, and we'd put it together. And that's when I really learned how friggin' tough it is to put a card together.
Oh, no, man. Speaking is so difficult.
It's like putting a lineup of comics. And I don't mean this. You've got to balance everything.
You have to
balance everything. Every match has to be balanced. Huh. And I would say, you know, we can't open the show with a guy splitting his head open the first match. It doesn't work.
No, you build. It's like telling a story.
Yes,
you know,
right.
It's like, as a writer, you build. You want to get
chapter one.
Yeah, you grab their attention, and you build.
Yeah.
And that's when I worked WrestleMania 20.
Yeah.
And which I think was the biggest what they had at the time, like the biggest WrestleMania. And it's hard. You can't have like the last three matches being high octane matches, you know, because at the end, the audience is going to be physically wiped out.
I mean, done.
You've got to sort of level here and up and down. It's good. I've always thought like this is like an EKG graph, up and down,
yep.
up and down.
Exactly.
And you have the diva match. You've got a comical match. Yep. But you've got something you can break away from. But if you have all these high intensity matches and you're building, you're just going to be burnt out, and the audience will and the wrestler will feel the audience being burnt out. That's not good.
That's what happens with a lot of little promotions that I see. I'll go to a show at a VFW or something. Every match is a ladder, blood, take the fluorescent lights, smash them, and stab each other. And
it's overkill.
Like, that's just, why can't we just have a match?
Yeah, it's like watching a John Woo film, all right? When he first came out, he had these amazing, then like later on, half of his movies were just gunfights.
That's all it was.
And I'm a John Woo fan, but I mean, half of the film just became a continuous gun battle, so you couldn't catch your breath. It's like the pacing. It's pacing and storytelling. Wrestling is it's a narrative. It's a visual narrative. It's a physical narrative. But you need pacing with that.
That's right.
Well, that's why
within a match and within a card.
Well, this is why. Like I look at it, and you'll understand this because you worked with Vince. Is like it's the last piece of vaudeville. It's the last piece of variety television.
It's the Red last.
It all.
Yeah.
It really is everything.
It is the last of the. I don't like to say passion play, but it in a way
it is.
It's totally a passion play.
It's a passion play.
You guys get beaten down. It's I think the first thing it is a passion play
for sure.
Because you're seeing, you know, we are wrestling guys. And so we always protect them, even though you protect the business, you protect your friends, you protect the business. It's a knee-jerk reaction, but you're really seeing, guy, it's an opera of emotions. I mean, it's basic storytelling. It's good guy, bad guy. It's protagonist, antagonist, however you want to break it down. Wrestling is the culmination of all storytelling throughout the world.
Pre-biblical.
Yeah.
It all comes down to, and everything is just resolved within the ring. And, you know, when it's good, when it's really good, you're emotionally involved in the, not just the match, leading up to the match, the aftermath.
Sure.
That's what makes it great.
I'll tell you something. If it wasn't for pro wrestling, I'm serious, I think that street fighting would still be popular like in the days of the Gangs of New York.
Well,
you wouldn't have television,
you know, the history. Gorgeous George sold more TVs than Milton Berle.
My dad, when television first came out, I wasn't even born yet, but when the Dumonts first came out, he went out, bought a Dumont. My mom would tell me the house would be packed with neighbors, people they didn't even know, to come over to watch wrestling live from the Lowell Gardens in Newark, New Jersey.
Yep.
And when I was a little kid, I started watching. I've told that story about when I called the cops because I thought that Gene Konitsky was going to kill Johnny Valentine.
He probably would have.
Go ahead. Hit me with the elbow again. Go on. Try it. But and I love Johnny Valentine. I did get to meet him.
That was one of the best part about being in the NWA, or were these reunions and conventions and always being around him.
And it's great to walk up to someone like a Bobby Davis or a heel and say, you know, when I was a kid, I hated you. And it's great to have him go, thank you very much.
That's
it's just great.
It's funny because, I mean, you know, I've worked in Hollywood for a while. And I hate to say that, but I've worked in wrestling. You meet a lot of people. You never try not to mark out. But the first person, I'd say that when I'm a big Superstar Billy Graham fan, and I'd seen Billy before I got in the business. I knew him. But when I had seen Bobby Heenan, I was like, this was it. Because to me, wrestling, the culmination of all my wrestling passion was Bobby Heenan. Because to me, as a not just as a wrestler, but as a commentator, but as a color guy, as a character, Bobby is what wrestling is all about. It's entertaining, it's infuriating, it's funny, it's enthralling. And Bobby, to me, was it. He was just a natural.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time when I saw Bobby Heenan, I tried not to, you know, mark out. I said, oh, that's Bobby Heenan. That's Bobby Heenan. You know, and what do? You know, and he goes, hey, and he was just a great guy.
Yeah.
He was a really nice guy. I met him backstage, and I would not want to act like
a mark. Yeah.
And I shook hands with him and stuff, and he goes, what the show? I said, well, I'm working with Boy Meets World was the show with they had Van Vader playing the kid's...
You're right.
Playing the kid's father, and we were working. I said to him, I'm working with that. And he was so ingratiating. Told me to sit down. And Pat Patterson, who loves me, came over. What are you doing here? You know, I can tell you about that. And he went, oh, this is my friend. And
Bobby
just, knows. I mean,
he was awesome.
My guy was Freddie Blassie.
God, yes.
Here in L.A., a lot of people don't realize Freddie Blassie was a wrestler in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And a vicious wrestler. If you thought the Sheik, the original Sheik, was vicious, I think Freddie Blassie was
beyond that.
Literally, I watched him... take the file.
Yeah, and file his teeth on television.
Yeah.
Eat the glass. And when I, with Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy. That's when I met Fred.
Yeah.
And Fred Blassie looks at me and goes, are you screwed up with him too? Are you as nuts as him? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I guess so. He goes, oh, Jesus Christ, we're going to have it. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's do it. You know, and he was just the coolest guy. And when I got to meet him, the first time I really met him was at the Elizabeth Armory. It was freezing out. This is like 1971 or two, and he comes in with Jimmy Valiant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And they were heels. And all the good guys walked right by, and you're trying to, you know, and him and Jimmy Valiant came in, and I said, Mr. Blassie, and he went, hey, how you doing? Put his bags down, signed an autograph. Yeah. Jimmy Valiant signed an autograph. And I stood there going, maybe I should be rooting for the bad guys.
I'm always rooting for the heel.
Great, you know?
Without
the heel, there is no wrestling.
There is no story, and I've said this before. As a writer, for the most part, your hero is very reactionary. He waits for the villain or the heel, the Rudo, to do something. And it's the guy, your villain, your antagonist, he's the guy that has an agenda. I want this. I need this. He justifies in his head. And that's the guy, this is the alpha dog.
Mm-hmm.
And your hero just reacts to him doing something. I want those land rights. I want that water right. I want that
justified.
Woman.
Justified. The show Justified finished last night.
And I was going to bring that up. There's a TV show, Justified, and I'm a big Elmo Leonard fan, as his crime stuff and his westerns. And Justified just finished up. But I was thinking of it, not just as a wrestling fan, as a writer, but you got two guys there that, for the most part, they sort of had these turns because you're this great, Walter Goggins was a great actor. I mean, I was a big fan of him on The Shield. And he was brilliant as Shane Vandrell.
Great on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he plays a surprise role there.
Yeah.
But he played on Justified, he plays Boyd Crowder. And you've said it, I think Boyd Crowder is one of these characters that really transcended the role. I mean, he was amazing, and he had so many different facets to him. He had the face turn was that he became the good guy, and he realized it's like when William Regal tried to turn good, and he tries to walk down that straight line, but he knows, he says, you know, at one point he said to a bunch of white collar, he goes, you guys are criminals. I'm an outlaw. And that was a brilliant line. Oh. It summed up everything he was.
It summed it all up.
And I don't know if you've seen the last episode. Did you?
I don't want to spoil it, but
It really, and it just sums up, you know, how the relationship between, because without Boyd Crowder, Raylan Givens doesn't really exist
because
this is his darker part. This is the same thing in Shane. Without Jack Palance, Alan Ladd's just the guy in a buckskin suit wanting to go after Gene Arthur. He needs his id. I mean, every time the bad guy shows, and I think the Bud Bedecker Westerns, I've said this, when the tall T, when Randolph Scott goes against Richard Boone, that he's killing himself. He's killing that dark part of himself. And these guys realize that they respect each other because they are each other at one point. And one guy takes a heel turn, a face, whatever, and they split off that way. But that's why wrestling is great with storytelling, because at one point the hero and villain are always the same guy.
Yeah.
If you watch, if you look at the history of wrestling, all the great guys have gone back and forth, mm-hmm. back and forth. That's what makes it so ingenious and enthralling.
I want to the Pierce Cabana feud, which was 5 years.
An amazing angle.
The only other feud that I can think of, other than Tolis and Blassie, was Sammartino and Monsoon.
That's true.
That feud went 7 years before Monsoon turned face. And Tolis and Blassie, they would hate each other, kill each other. And then there would be that common enemy. And that one night, they would unite to fight the common enemy, this tag team that came in from Mexico, or these guys.
Black Gordon and Goliath.
Yeah, they're here in L.A.
You know, I used to go to when I first moved here in 74, I didn't have any friends, and I still don't.
Still don't, so at least he's consistent, right?
It stays the same. But I remember watching the matches from the Olympic in New Jersey on Channel 41 in Spanish, and I had never seen Dutch Savage.
Yeah.
I'd never seen Cyclone Negro.
Sure.
Fred Blassie in action like that. You know, I'd never seen this kind of...
Different style.
Way different.
Yeah, different style.
And then I would watch, like, stars from where we were come to the West Coast, and all of a sudden...
Like Johnny Ross.
They're not winning.
Yeah, unpredictable.
Yeah. Now, Johnny Ross would come out as Java Rook.
Java Rook.
And with Roddy Piper, and he was winning. Yet back east, he was, you know...
Just Jobber just Johnny Ross.
Johnny Jobber Johnny Ross, unless it was Pete Sanchez, and he mopped him up. Yeah. But the thing was, I learned, I began to really... Then I started buying more magazines, reading, because now I'm seeing these guys. And when I moved here, the first time I went to the Olympic, I walked in, I was sitting about midway back, and I looked around and I went, they're right. There's not a bad seat in the building.
Oh, the
this
Olympic was
built
great.
For Olympic
that was a great,
boxing.
I
can't tell you how many incredible, I saw Hulk Hogan body slam Andre the Giant there.
I believe
no
it,
cameras,
it,
no, I 1981.
Believe it. Oh, he did that 10
times. Body slammed him twice.
Before he did WrestleMania 3, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw
Harley
so
did
many.
It. Harley did it in Japan.
Yeah, and Inoki, everyone. Yeah,
Connect. I saw so many great matches there with the Guerrero brothers, Gory Guerrero. I mean, Piper when he started. My cousin Adrian Adonis, who was Keith Frank.
Yeah.
And that's where I got to meet at one of the NWA shows that came in. I got to meet Ric Flair. Yeah. And I said to Keith, there's Ric Flair's down here. And he goes, yeah, go mark out. You know, so
you know who the Rick last guy great, you know? Who ran wrestling at the Olympic? Joey Chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Joey Chaos.
I did. And I wrote the
thousands.
Book. I wrote the book Mondo Lucha Gogo.
Yeah, I got it.
I'll decide. Yeah. But the very last Lucha match was there.
Yeah.
And I was going through there. And I got to tell you, I mean... I can't believe that the city of Los Angeles didn't do something. Hey, we'll buy this. I mean, this is the Madison Square Garden. This is an amazing cultural thing, and the city of Los Angeles should have done something.
If you've never been in a building, I would be in that building with standing room only.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could get there at 10 o'clock, and if you were late, you could buy a standing room ticket, at least get in and see the main event. And I did that a few times.
Two times a week you can do that. Wednesday was TV.
And Fridays, right.
Wednesday was TV.
And
Friday was the house show.
One of the shows I saw there, Lonnie Moondog Main, just went berserk and literally was climbing the pipes, the walls. And it was just spectacular. And then when WWF came in and brought their shows, they were spectacular because I think wrestling shouldn't, that's just me, but I think when wrestling is in a 10, 12,000 seat building, tops, the power.
The energy's, when the energy, you're right, energy's the energy's concentrated. It's concentrated. It's almost like when you spread it out more. And sometimes I was watching WrestleMania 31, I guess, and I saw some of the camera angles. I'm like, God, these people, you can't see the ring.
No.
But there's an intimacy.
You gotta watch the big screen.
There's an intimacy in wrestling. Right. It's so visceral, like boxing. When you're right there, you're almost on top of them and stuff. That's why I go to a lot of Lucha Libre things and matches. And there's something about the vibe of the crowd. And if the crowd plays off the ring, and it's sort of, it dissipates after a while. And so when you're close to something like that, and the Olympic, just the history of the Olympic, I mean, I used to train with Gene LaBelle.
Sure.
And the stories that Gene would have, I mean, and
you know Gene LaBelle.
Oh, Gene, and just the stories, and you realize, and this was a hallowed place, and it just, and all these places are going now. I mean, the Olympics gone, and Madison Square Garden still, I mean, that's the third Madison Square Garden, but it's not, you know, but these places, you know, the Boston, I grew up in the Boston Garden. I grew up with, I used to go to the Boston Garden all the time.
Yep.
Now it's the Fleet Center.
Yep.
Ricky Sexton, 245 out of Boston.
Yeah, it's so, and the reason I think we're wrestling fans is we're fans of history in a way. Because if you love wrestling, you're automatically a history fan, at least history of the business.
And that's how but that's what made me, I got into wrestling just because it allowed me to make television. That's the truth.
Yeah.
I did not grow up a wrestling fan. And, you know, when I admit that to people, they get kind of tripped out about it because I wasn't a wrestling fan. I didn't care about the moves. I didn't care about anything. What caught my attention, I think, was I was, as a kid, in the grocery store, and I saw the Pro Wrestling Illustrated with Piper making Valentine's ear bleed with dog collars or something.
Oh, that's great.
And so that was the photo, I think, on the cover for that Starcade or whatever that was. I think it was Starcade. And then I started flipping through magazines. I had cousins that were really into it and all that. And I was always down at the building because my grandparents were part of the concessions. So I was there. But what I was paying attention to were the cameras, and they had, like, I think they were, like, three Norelco gigantic.
Oh.
The size of this room.
Yes, gigantic, beautiful cameras.
Yeah.
Beautiful cameras, broadcast cameras. It was
with
KTLA. It was either KTLA. Not that time. No, I take that back.
Channel 52 used to have the Saturday night show.
I was going to say, it was in Spanish.
Yeah.
And Miguel Alonso was down there.
Miguel Alonso, Nono Arsuz, Louis Magana.
That's
right. I remember them all.
All those guys were down there. And so, but what I would watch is, if you remember at the Olympic, because it was for boxing, and it was a boxing ring they were in.
Yeah, yeah.
They would do the round pulse on those lights. There were lights that would light up.
Yeah.
But that was the go home. And, like, nobody got it.
Yeah.
And but I, me as a kid, sitting there eating popcorn or whatever, like, oh, and then the match ends.
Wait a second. Someone's getting knocked out right
and
now.
And then you could hear the announcer say, we'll be back.
You know?
I was like, oh, hang on a second. And then when we'd come back and I'd watch it some more, so the guy ringing the bells wearing a headset.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. I get this now.
You picked up the technical aspect.
Absolutely.
Which is great.
Yeah, because, like, growing up a fan of Walt Disney and Jim Henson, you know, you have to figure out, like, well, how do you do puppeteering?
You know, it's kind of funny you say that about the bulbs that would be on
Because they would just pulse.
Yeah. Roddy Piper was wrestling Keith in a loser leave town thing, and Keith unscrewed the bulb. Adrian Adonis, eventually. He unscrews the bulb, and he works Piper. And then later on, I said to him, I remember that night when you did that, and he said, yeah, I caught a lot of crap about that. I said, why? He says, well, there was no bulb there to
to give the cue. Not at all. I mean, they even had a floor director sitting under the hard cam. And, like, back then, it was
to Bill Cardill, Philadelphia Wrestling, because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a sports announcer, whatever. And I said, boy, if I could break in as a wrestling announcer, that'll be easier because nobody wants to do that. Yeah, right.
This is a nice trivia question, Bill Cardill. What horror movie was he in?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
What's Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, Living Dead, sure.
And where did his daughter become? She was in Day of the Dead.
You know,
I didn't know that.
I still have a letter I wrote to him in high school, and he would say, send a self-addressed stamped envelope. And I still have the letter, and he wrote back to me.
Yep.
And I was really sad when he was no longer doing WWF, because he did the matches. He had his own stop. Man, he was way ahead.
Sure.
Everything he was doing then, he would actually, Chief J. Strongo would be dancing around, and he'd go, well, he's going to start his dance. You know, I saw Julia Prowse the other night. She was doing a dance. And then he'd go, two great dancers, Chief J. Strongo and Julia Prowse.
Nice.
I'm 15. I'm rolling on the floor laughing. I'm like, this guy's doing inside jokes.
But that's great, because you could let your guy go.
I mean, awesome, man.
Let your commentator go. Let your color guy go. Let them have fun, because if you try to reel guys in too much, and we know how it happens. Someone's in your ear all the time. That's when you know you got a good color guy. You know, you got to let these guys fall sometimes so they can grow.
Yeah. Stu Stone on our show was just that. But the great thing with him, he was a child star. tons of animation he did as a kid.
Voices and stuff.
Yeah, he's
you're
great.
A big animation. You're a big fan of animation.
I am a big fan of animation.
And he's very animated.
He is, yeah. Which is why we were great together. Like back, well, you've been watching the show for a while, so we would do stuff on Hollywood Boulevard together.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was Abbott and Costello, basically.
I thought all that stuff was great. Yeah, and Sean Rickard on Hollywood Boulevard going, huh?
Yeah, we did that.
That was great.
We did that for like four New Years in a row. Our New Year's show was from Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. And then we went and produced a actual New Year's Eve show, a real broadcast that went to hell very quick.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, it was called First Night with Jimmy Kennedy in front of the Chinese Theater.
Oh, nice.
And it was
first and last.
Oh, it was.
And last. Yeah, you love Jamie Kennedy.
We could talk about that later, but it's like the worst thing in my
Kennedy,
career.
My friend Al Berman works with him. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but I produced with Stu. We did the very first and quite possibly the last West Coast ball drop. It was 2013. And we had Macy Gray and Bone Thugs Harmony.
I watched
Jr.
it.
Paid for the whole thing or didn't pay for the whole thing.
Oh, that's another story.
And we blocked off Hollywood Boulevard, and we were in front of the Chinese Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Kirshner was our partner, and we should, Ely, the guy who owns the damn block.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had all those guys behind this thing, and KDOC produced it with me. I guess we can say that now. We were on 13 stations up and down the West Coast live.
Oh, it was great. And it was a good show. Amazing. It was a really good show.
It was me just saying, hey, in my hometown, why don't we do something fun? Originally, it was just going to be in Commerce Casino, Jerry Lewis type stuff. And then Jamie was like, no, we got to do it big. And we did it big, and then it went to hell.
Smart.
But
that was your day at the clown cried, right?
Oh, my gosh.
We've got about 3-4 minutes. I want you to talk about what's happening.
Till the end of the show?
Yes.
Oh, we went that fast.
When it's good, it goes quick.
Okay.
What I want to know about is championship wrestling from Hollywood.
Sure.
What's coming up? What's going on? I understand there are some big things happening.
Just
had a title change this past week.
Well, the Vermin owns every championship in the company now.
Especially that weasel.
Which has made me have to come out of the back and take the headset off and be the boss. And my family's involved now. My son Noel's out there with me, and we're out there yelling and screaming at cameras and everything and trying to keep the show rolling. But this faction has every championship, and they made threats that they were going to take the titles to Vince. They were going to take them to Puerto Rico. And I had a Vermin rule, which they, if anyone came ringside, anyone in the back can collect a bounty.
That's right. I remember
if they get them out of there.
Yep.
So now that's abolished because they threatened to take the championships away. And so with that, anything can happen. They just had a big Chuck Barris-type celebration at our show where we had balloons and with balloons and Gene the dancing machine and everything fell from the sky. That'll air in a few weeks.
It aggravates me because Hobo is such a
great guy.
Great, great competitor.
Yeah.
Awesome wrestler. And to watch that weasel run out of the ring constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
John Huma.
To renew my manager's license and find a good 160-pound.
Well, you could come to our Wrestle Center and get back in shape.
Well,
to Sherman Oaks. Well, come on down.
I'll come. Down.
But at any rate, every two weeks we tape the show in Port Hueneme. HollywoodWrestling.com has all that information.
So we get tickets there.
Yeah. And tickets are free. So it's just like going to the Price is Right or anything. You can walk right up. There's plenty of seats. We have it usually blocked for television. We know what the crowd normally is. The theater is fantastic. It's again, right on the beach in Port Wayne. It's called the Ocean View Pavilion.
They have refreshments and everything in there. So
Everything like that. So Instagram, all that stuff. We're all on Twitter. Everything. You could find us. Find me.
Thank you. And I want to put one quick plug in that this Saturday on ABC7, La Vista, at 6:30 p.m., they're going to do a recap of La Bouya.
Fabulous.
They're going to sit there. It was ABC. They were fantastic with us. They covered the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
So this Saturday, to all the thousands of fans out there, this Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, ABC 7, it's called LA Vista. They're going to cover La Bouya. I'm having you now saying you have to come back to the show.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to come back.
We're not going to talk wrestling. We're going to talk animation, movies, because
we could talk Bob Clampett all day.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah. We can.
I mean, Bob Clampett.
And that's
cartoon.
The great thing about wrestling. I mean, the people in the business are more multifaceted than you imagine. So just talking to the showman, I mean, we could go for hours about various things. So you have to, I'm saying right now, we'll schedule you in, David Marquez.
Exactly.
Come back to the show.
Sure. Come back anytime.
We had a fantastic time.
Fantastic
Jenny, thank
time.
You for
Jenny,
everyone once
thank
again.
You.
Paul
Chris
McGee,
George,
wherever,
Paul
you
McGee
are,
Paul, wherever you are.
Paul, illustrious Paul McGee, Joey Gaynor.
Dan Madigan, my good friend, Taylor. I just want to say we're going to miss you, Taylor. I didn't get a chance to do that last time. But thank you all for tuning in. Wrestling with the Popculturians doesn't get any better than this. Thanks for sticking around, not clicking around.
Back in the US.